Good morning and welcome to our meeting. It is 9:00 AM on December 19th, 2023. And time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County DOT Board of Commissioners. I'm Rebecca Walsh, President of the Commission. Today we have with us Commissioner Sid Logan, Vice President. Commissioner Tony Olson will be joining us soon. We have John Harlow, CEO, General Manager, Colin Willoughby, General Counsel. Melissa Collins, Commissioner and Executive Services Director. Allison Morrison, Clerk of Court, and Morgan Stolzner, Deputy Clerk of Court. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices. This session is for the Board and CEO, General Manager, to study and discuss issues among ourselves and with PUD staff. I'll now turn the meeting over to our CEO, General Manager, John Harlow, who will facilitate the discussion.
Good morning, Commissioner Walsh. Good morning, Commissioner Logan. Some good stuff today. We'll get right into it. Legislative updates were in your packet. We have the DR team here if there are any questions.
No, there is quite a bit happening with the new, you know, proclamation on the solution to the dams and or the Columbia River system operations, all of that happening. And today, news, the U.S. Forest Service has announced their new policy on protection of our old growth forests. So that's coming out today.
Excellent.
That's all.
I don't have any questions. I am eager at some point to understand more about what all of this means.
Yeah.
Hearing of articles, yeah.
Yeah, and the team, our team is doing a deep dive, trying to pull all the information we can. Kim Johnson spent last week out in DC, running herself ragged, but we will come back to the commission in January with, or I'll say the first part of the year, early as possible to give an update and an overview on what this all means.
I think the really important thing on this is that it is controversial and that we just want to stick to the facts.
Yes.
Try to avoid strong biases.
And it's right now trying to figure out what the facts are.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So we'll come back with an update and an overview on that. All right, we will get right to our first presentation, which is an update on our Connect Up project with Kevin Labering and Tim Epp. Good morning, Kevin.
Morning, John. Morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
All right, well, Tim Epp and myself, program managers on the Connect Up program, we're excited to give you our quarterly update today. Our last update was on September 5th of this year. Purpose of this presentation, again, is to provide a program update for you to keep you up to speed on what's happening and then talk about our next steps also. So our agenda for this morning, we'll first look at give you an update on the meter delivery and forecast update, particularly around the electric meters, as we've had some challenges with those. We'll also look at the program schedule, budget review, and then go into deep dive into our deployment phase progress report, looking at meter deployment, base station installations, hypercare transition, communications and customer interaction update, and also results from feedback from our customers on our recent installations. So first of all, we'll look at our meter delivery and forecast update. So throughout the year, we've been getting updates from Census, and they've transferred their manufacturing base to a company called Flextronics about a year or so ago. And during that time, with COVID and such, there's been some challenges that they've had. One of the challenges has been around components, delays in components that we've talked about previously in other presentations. They were able to catch up and get enough components, but they have also had some labor challenges too, having to train new people for their assembly lines. And because of this, really up until about the third quarter, they were trying to catch up and really understand what really is our capacity of our assembly lines that we have. They have two assembly lines for the current meter that we're purchasing. Once that got all caught up, they were at capacity, they found out that they were producing at a lower rate than they had expected, that they calculated beforehand. So we were, we met with them. We wanted to have a face-to-face with them. We met with them in October, talk more about this, really get to the root cause, and this is where they indicated why the rates are so low. And they also stated that they could have communicated more clearly to us what was happening, and I think even internally they probably could have understood what was going on, maybe calculated that their production rates were going to be lower. So we got to that point of talking about root causes. We then said, okay, looking forward, what can we do? What are the mitigation steps that we can take? And so a couple of things that they offered up that they're actively working on right now is one is to add a third assembly line to their facilities. And so the DT96, that's the meter that we're primarily purchasing for Connect Up program. That will have a third line that will be coming up sometime in the second quarter of 2024. It takes about 6 months to build this up. Additionally, they're looking at their existing manufacturing lines and looking for opportunities to increase throughput there. And so looking for ways to automate portions that do have choking points within their manufacturing. So those are two areas that we'll see an increase of meters. But even so, with a slower production rate, they do have a lot of customers with a huge backlog. And so it's slow in the recovery of being able to deliver a huge quantity of meters to us immediately. So with the district, kind of, you know, what we can do on our side too is they are developing they're always developing a new meter. They always want to have two meters that they're offering. These are for residential, for example. So they have this new meter called PT121.
Aren't you glad I'm late?
No. We love having all three of you here.
You're kind.
All right. So the new meter, they're testing it out right now. So this new meter has different components, more readily available components. And so they have it's really a different offering, but it's a very similar meter. It's one that's compatible with our systems. And so we can use this one. And then since this is their new meter, eventually we will be purchasing this meter sometime down the road. But perhaps we can start ordering these earlier if, well, number one, we want to make sure the quality is good. So as they're testing this out with a couple of utilities right now, we want to see the results of those towards the end of the first quarter of this coming year. So we'll look at that. We'll also see what kind of capacity, what availability of that meter that they do have. It does cost a little bit more. It's about, right now, my understanding is 10% more than our current meter. So we wanted to make sure we do a business case with that and see if it does make sense if we go that route. This could save us a little bit of time in our deployment, not a lot, but maybe one quarter, maybe bring it up and back one quarter.
You're going to be surprised to hear this from me, but take a risk and go.
Okay.
I think the loss in terms of the benefits, mm-hmm. maybe hard cost or soft cost, are big.
Absolutely.
By not being able to implement the entire program. So all Tony is saying, take a risk, the money will be worth it.
Okay, thank you.
So I've got some questions. How does Census give out the meters to all their customers? And I mean, I know they're not happy with the price they agreed to,
mm-hmm.
right? Is that influencing the rate at which they're producing them or delivering them to us, do you think, or how do we navigate that? And are there performance metrics in that contract for time? And
yeah, there are already, well, on the first question regarding the meter production, so how do they divvy these out? So they have quarterly meetings internally where they look at their customers, their customer base, They do have some new customers that they're holding them off, but they are getting a few meters, you know, here and there. So that is slowing things down a little bit for us. But because they've delivered so few meters over the last couple of years, there's this huge backlog that's built up for a lot of us. And so a lot of utilities, we're making sure we're a loud squeaky wheel with them. We're trying, definitely making sure they have our attention with this. So they're saying all of their customers are screaming at them right now, that they're all challenged, they all want more meters. But we all know that each other exists, and we're even checking with other utilities, and they're having the same issues with that. So we're pretty confident that there's not like one single customer that's getting this huge allotment, and we're getting a smaller allotment. And it feels like we're getting.
Are they trying to create ways to move up farther on the list?
That's a good point. Yeah, and so, you know, kind of applies with our contract. We have a very good price on our contract for those meters. So we brought that up. We're like, does that put them ahead? And best we can tell, we are still, it's almost like they are not looking at the price, that they're still dividing them out evenly between the different utilities. And we don't know what their contract price is or not. And I think everybody is trying to, is meeting with them, trying to make sure that they're up on the list, but the pie is only so big. And they're saying that they're dividing it out as best as they can right now. I'm sure other utilities, because we're trying to move up on the list too ourselves.
Just frustrating if they're trying to steer us to a new meter to help us speed up
right
how quick we can get meters, unless of course the meter has benefits. But I mean, I agree with Commissioner Olson. I don't want us to lose momentum.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, it take 8 years to
so here's the interesting thing about that, because we were thinking, okay, because they had been bringing up the new meter quite a bit over the last year. So this meeting that we had on the 10th, we were like, okay, let's be open to this. This might be an avenue. We're looking at any avenue that we can go on. And they said, you know what, you could stay on the DT96, the current model right now. That this one, it's still a brand new product. They have a lot of customers that want it. So they said the availability is going to be limited. So you could actually, and they're to us in the meeting with Census, it just felt like the DT96, that this is a longer term meter for them also, because they want to have, again, two prime residential meters. And so I was happily surprised. I think we were happily surprised that they weren't like pushing the 121 heavily on this.
Is the life expectancy of the 121 similar to, or?
Yeah, 20 years. They're both 20 years, yeah. And I mean, you know, the great thing about, or the benefit of that one is different components. So if there's a shortage of certain components for one meter, perhaps the other one wouldn't be impacted by that. And we are doing quality checks on these meters too, because, you know, as they're catching up with their production rates, we want to make sure that they still have adequate checks in there. So we do quality checks here. Census does quality checks also. So we're meters are coming in. So we're pretty happy with them. We do find some issues from time to time, but that's to be expected.
Have you had any fire issues?
No, we have not had fire issues.
Is there a similar meter offshore? I think there would be delivery issues with that too. So,
yeah, you're saying like another
well,
provider.
These are U.S. companies, right?
Yeah, U.S. company.
Which is my preference, but is there anything we could look beyond the United States?
Yeah, there's the challenge with this one is, and Aclara does have a meter that we can use. But they all use the Census communication model.
Oh, okay, so they don't have power.
Yeah, because that's the key to communicating with our base stations that we have. So Aclara is an option, and we're definitely pushing that as an option too.
Are these meters very different from the legacy gear that Seattle City Light is using?
It's a totally different company.
Okay, well, yeah.
Different meter that way. They use different modes of communication also. Component to component, I don't know, but they function very similarly.
Okay, great question there. Okay, so what does this mean as far as forecast numbers? So our for the electric meter side, and that's really what we've been focusing on this morning, we're looking at in 2024 an average of 8,500 meters per month throughout the year. That's an average, so it's going to be ramping up throughout the year. And so we get about 100,000 meters in 2024, continual ramp up into 2025, which would be 180,000 meters. And there's still a gap. There's still 115,000 meters that we need beyond that. So because of that, it's pushing us into 2026 for our deployment schedule. So we did it in the third quarter of 2026. So right now we're planning on receiving the last meters the end of the second quarter of 2026, and we've got that remaining quarter for the remaining installations. On the water side, the forecast, we're on schedule with that one. The team's doing a great job. Census forecast for all water meters through the end of 2025. So we'd have over 6,000 in 2024 and 12,000 in 2025. With the planned installation completion in the very beginning of 2026. Okay, any questions, any other questions on the meter delivery?
Oh no.
Well, I guess, is there a good side to it being slower? Is it making it easier to staff and employ because we're getting at a slower rate?
Yes, actually, yes. It's been nice because we've had, you know, we started installing meters. We had our friends and family meters back in June and July timeframe. We learned from that, but it was just couple dozen meters that we were dealing with. We've had a slower rollout. Now we've got, you know, over 3,000 electrical meters that are installed, and similar, close to that number for water meters. And so this slower rollout, we've been able to learn things that have improved our processes. So that's been very good. I can't remember, it's been so many times where people have said, why we've had a slower rollout. We've been able to learn from this. Yeah. And so we've had some challenges where if we had a lot of meters out there, it would have been much harder to do.
How has that affected the labor supply installers?
Yeah, good question. So right now we're still working with our three leads. We just have the quantities. Our three leads are able to do all of our installations right now. We're just installing, you know, 100 to 200 a week right now, so that's not a problem. The neat thing with that is they've been able to their installation rates is high, a little higher than what we were projecting. Now they are in our first area, which is kind of a newer area. It's not as challenging there with some issues that might pop up. But that's been going really well. And then as far as hiring new additional, so these are our leads that will be leading our teams. And so we will start hiring a couple of installers that will work with them as our numbers start going up. And we're looking at in 2024, going up to somewhere 9 to 10 installers at that point.
That's quite a bit under what you were doing before.
It is. So the curve of hiring installers, we thought it was going to be peaking at a higher level, and now we're kind of flattening it out, longer duration. So we probably won't have as many installers hired.
Well, savings too.
That's
a
positive, yeah.
Yeah. So there's, you know, with it, if the efficiency rates stay good, that could be some savings there too. Okay. Great. So just high level schedule update. We've talked about some of this already, but this just shows where we are in the program schedule. So we're currently in that fourth phase of the deployment phase, where we continue to install meters. Customers are receiving communications, informing them of their upcoming installations. That process has been working really well. Tim's going to talk more about that.
And then also wrapping up our base station installations that we'll talk about in just a minute. So you can see on here, we now have a schedule going into 2026 due to the census moving away.
So all the communications regarding the opt-out option, mm-hmm. seems like people have to really almost beg to get that information. It's not just out there.
Yeah.
That's my impression. Is it correct?
Okay.
I've had messages from constituents saying, you know, hey, I just heard about this, and we need more lead time, we need to know about this. And so I know we don't want to encourage that, but at the same time, I think if we're going to be transparent and open to people who might want to opt out, that we need it, not hide it.
Okay. Yeah, so we're actively in our communications, we're mentioning there is an opt-out process. We do have people calling in that maybe they didn't even receive, they don't have their meter notifications just yet. We do have a 90-day, a 14-day where they're notified. Particularly in that 90-day, we try to give them, you know, 3-month heads up with the number to call, how to follow that process to opt out. So there is, we include that in that notification. If people call up and it's a little earlier than their meter is projected to be delivered, they're stepped through the process for that. So there is a process for them to follow. And then we do have, and Tim's gonna talk a little bit more about this. How many do we have so far, as 8 or?
9 as of 9. This morning.
Okay.
And that part of that is because people don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not making that widely known.
Okay. Well, we can take that back and look for ways to improve communications on that too.
I will say, Commissioner, that when I did the friends and family meter, I did get things in the mail tell me about the opt-out option. So what you're describing happened also, that you get the information ahead of time before you get your meter. So I understand if they're not understanding before they're close to getting their meter, but once you're close, the information is
As we've pretty. Said about other issues, people don't like to be surprised.
Yeah. But, that's why we're trying to take that multiple layer approach with them.
And could you refresh my memory on how we're, I know that if people have to, if they want to have a meter reader, they have to pay for that, right?
Right.
But if they report it themselves, there's no charge,
exactly. It's $5 to take a picture, $5 a month to report yourself on your own. And then it's 25 for 25 if you have a meter reader come out.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, and then program budget. So originally approved budget January 2021 was $93.2 million. And right now, with the changes we've talked about, our projected cost through the, through 2026 is $91.1 million. So right now, we're projected to be $1.6 million under. You notice that's a little lower than our last time we reported. This is due to the meter installations going into 2026. There's overheads associated with that. So that's
There's lost.
Mm-hmm.
Extending it out from what we, I'm not going to repeat the comments when I first came in the door, but you know, Tony is always liking that third call, that third row. However, reality is set in.
Right.
So I'm not going to repeat what I gave you.
We also agreed on a contingency that's not in this number, right?
Yes, that's correct,
yeah,
Commissioner.
I think that's important.
That's right. Excuse me.
Yeah. So that the 10% or $9 million contingency is not, we don't have plans for it right now, and it's not part of this.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. So let's look at the deployment phase, some additional updates associated with that. So right now,
with our electric meters, we've received over 14,000 electric meters that are a combination have been installed or in our warehouses right now. And for water meters, we have 5,500 in our warehouses or installed, and then another 3,600 modules that buddy up with the water meter itself to communicate to our base stations. Currently focusing on Bothell and Mill Creek for our electric installations, and water, we're focusing on Lake Stevens. Upcoming activities, current plan is to ramp up to approximately 10 electric meter technicians in 2024. And by the end of first quarter, we'll have that discussion with Census around the DT1221, that new meter, see how we can bring that into the fold. Question?
Meter technicians, are those the installers?
Yes. We have three leads right now, and then they'll have installers that will work in their groups.
Period of couple. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So obviously, the three leads are doing all of the install.
Right now, yes.
And those positions are time limited.
They are time limited. Yes. And so connect up meters install, and this changes every day, but as of when we published the slide, 3,500 installed for the electric meters and 2,500 water meters have been installed. So we've talked about the risks and challenges around supply chains, and we'll continue to work with Census on that. We meet with them bi-weekly to talk about forecasts, talk about delivery of meters and such, and so we'll continue with that. And it's looking a lot like Christmas in our inventory, in our warehouses. So we're getting a lot of packages delivered to us, and so we're happy about that. And our goal is to, we want to help mitigate risk. We want to build up inventory. And we can always catch up with the installation, but we don't want to get too far ahead of hiring installers and then run out of meters. So we'll continue that. Yeah. Throughout the year. Okay, and then AMI base station for our network, AMI base station network deployment. We have, so Jeff Cullen is leading this project, 124 base stations installed. So we're really excited about that. Out of 149, so 83% of those have been installed to date. We have this R100, it's a mini base station. It's less expensive than the standard base station. And we just had our first one installed. It's working well, but we saved some money on that one for locations that are smaller in area, don't need the capacity as a larger base station. So that one can install, test it out, working well. And then we just finalized our remaining 10 permits in Everett. So we've got a lot of sites there that we can start installing too. Upcoming activities, we'll continue our base station installations through second quarter of 2024. And risks and challenges, we're continuing to work with the City of Edmonds on the 7 permits that we have there. There have been some discussions going on, but they're currently on hold there right now. Continue those talks.
When we install a base station, do we install a meter in that area to get some continual feedback that it's the whole system's working, or is that not necessary?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we started installing the base stations earlier last year without even having meters around. So there's a certification process that Census has lined up. So we install it, and there's all sorts of testing, communication testing that takes place with that. It has to be configured properly. Do verification on that, and so that in a way is the meter test as they send signals to it, and it relays that information back to us.
I guess I was thinking of an area like Darrington that's hilly, mountainous, treed. Do we then have confidence that we have the system to pick up that last house at the end of the road in the valley, kind of thing?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we you know, Census helps us out with a RF radio frequency study that maps out, and they have all the topography of the area. So they can tell where mountains are, trees, even the seasons can change because you'll have more leaves on, you know, springtime compared to wintertime, you have snow. So there's a lot of different variables that they plug in, and it's able to map out the projected coverage for that base station. So on paper, you can tell that it should work, and then once we start installing meters, we're verifying it there too. And then Census has, it's part of our contract that they have to cover those meters that are within that RF study. Okay, any other questions on this area?
No.
Neither do I.
Okay, thank you. All right. Turn the time over to Tim Epp, who will be talking about hybrid air transition and other items.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm going to add a couple of comments from previous. Commissioner Wolf, I'll follow up with corporate communications and our customer service department on opt-out communications and see what we can take a look at for visibility and clarity online, so that that's a little better. Also, another note, you asked about Landis and Gear meters. Landis and Gear is also having the same, well, I don't know if it's the same cause, but also having supply chain issues.
Yes.
And struggling to deliver meters like Census. So I'm completely alone here. I don't know if that's really consoling or not, but it is kind of the state of a wide.
You know where theirs are manufactured?
I actually do not. All right, hypercare transition. As Commission will recall, the effort to put in all of the software systems around the AMI system was a substantial effort. And we have been live ever since we've been setting meters so that we can bill our customers and be able to report back with their meter reads online. Those systems have been in place for some time, but we did retain a team to respond quickly to issues as they came up. And we call that hypercare, that post-implementation phase. I didn't make it up. I think it's more widely used in the industry, but it is a descriptive term. So that we do have this kind of rapid response team. So we are at a point, though, where we are confident in the quality of the systems. Doesn't mean we aren't having issues, that issues don't come up. But we're at a point where we do have some strong support knowledge already built up, and it's time to transition that work off of even this hypercare team back to our standard support internally. So that has that completed as of the end of November, and we'll continue to monitor that. And if we need to reverse that at some point in the future, I think we could do that. But right now, I think the team's feeling very confident about the quality of the system. The next thing, though, that is going on, the software support always continues. We have some significant software upgrades planned for next year, and the planning has already begun for that. So that will include upgrades of all of our significant AMI systems, as well as our SAP system for all of the billing and customer support. So pretty substantial body of work coming this next year from the technology side. Again, I have a lot of confidence in the team that will be on those upgrades.
How about the software in the meter itself? Can that be upgraded remotely?
Yes, it can. That is part of the base functionality of those systems. That should happen a lot less often than, say, software systems in-house. Customer and our communications with our customer, things have been going fairly well. I'm sure you saw the survey results. I'm going to get to that on the next slide. But we continue to work out and try to always refine and take a look at the effectiveness of our communication. One of the things that we know we needed to address before we get to doing apartment installations is that normally we hang a doorknob tag. If a customer's not home. We leave that on their front door so they know why their lights are or their clocks are blinking inside the house, a reminder that we were there to install. But in an apartment setting, we don't go to every single door. Often those are behind locked doors that we don't have access to. So we do have means of communicating to apartment complexes through little sandwich boards, signs that we set up outside the main entrances to those. We use those for regular power outage maintenance work already. So we're going to take advantage of that same kind of design. We have a notice already put together. CorpCom helped out with that. And we'll have those out ready to go. We are continuing to do our deployment communications regularly. We are monitoring customer calls and emails. Those have tapered off, I would say, pretty substantially over the last couple of months. Part of that is we've quieted down our initiation of communications, so the response hasn't been coming. But I think generally things are pretty positive. Our opt-out rate currently is sitting at under 0.3%, so that puts us pretty close to where Tacoma is. And so I think it's a fairly reliable index of where things are at. We'll see how things go as our, you know, as we start to spread out into other areas. I think that's generally a pretty positive number there. After we do our installation on that door hanger that we leave behind with customers, there is a QR code on there for the customers to be able to follow up and do a survey. One thing that, as I've talked to our corporate communications, when you ask for survey, you tend to get a higher response rate from people who have an issue, an accident, right? Something didn't go well. And so with that, I think our results that it came back were very positive, if we take that into consideration. I'll get there in just a moment. We are planning and working on a post-installation postcard and video, and that's to follow up with our customers and remind them, okay, now you can go to My Snowbud and you can look at your usage. Here are the things, other things coming in the not so distant future. So trying to reinforce what those benefits are that are coming as a result of getting that meter. As I mentioned, the post-installation survey we've had, this was as of a few weeks ago, actually, so I don't have the most current in front of me, but we have had 90 customers who filled out at least partial response. 58 of those were complete responses to all of the survey questions. And I'm not going to, I don't want to run through each and every one of these, but I think you will see that things were very positive, very high scores when it came to our customers and their experience with the installation. Some of the maybe frustrations had to do with just communication. I didn't realize. So we're always, again, we'll keep evaluating whether our three-day communication is sufficient and see if we need to layer in anything else in the future. But overall, the majority of our customers were very happy with the installation process. Again, for reference, a power outage is taking, honestly, it's less than a minute if everything goes correctly. And on the water side, it can be 20 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes, again, depending on how things go there. So a little bit longer on the water installation, as you can imagine. So generally very good. Questions from the board on any of this?
Are the results skew differently for the water versus electric?
I think they're pretty in line. I think we've had a couple more incidents on the water installation where something broke, and so I think there may be a little bit of a higher dissatisfaction, you know, given some of those customers, but generally it's been very positive. Very, very synchronous between the two.
I think these are good numbers.
Very happy with this. I think that bottom one, we've got an opportunity. The 53% excited about My Snowbud info, I think I'd love to see that a little bit higher. So
I'm sure everyone expects to be excited about it. Not yet, right? Until you.
It'll come.
On the leak detection, does that apply to electricity and water?
No, that is just for water. So we're getting a very high response from water customers saying they're excited to have that notification that they've got a leak. That was something that was spotted even in our friends and family deployments. Some of our friends and family who are experiencing leaks, and we were able to tell them. Yeah, wink. So very happy about that. I mean, to get those repairs made, probably with those customers. Next steps, we'll be back next quarter with our next update for the board. We will be taking a look at the DT-121s and continuing to work with Census on supply chain updated forecasts, and we'll be getting that back, of course. Hopefully by the end of first quarter, we should see the vast majority of our base stations installed and should have just a few more to knock out by that point. And we'll continue to update you on any changes to long-term forecast as we go. Any final questions from the board?
I have an observation. Not that you, I don't have a question.
Those are allowed.
Huh?
Those are allowed.
Okay. In reading this over the weekend, I'm thinking, you know, a huge project, long lead planning, and throughout this, challenges that had not been expected. So we got to turn left, right, whatever. And, you know, I would think as a member of the teams, I might get some fatigue, project fatigue. And that sometimes can lead to morale. And my comments related to, I want to make sure that you understand how critical the work, send a message to staff, how critical the work that's being done will affect the future of this utility. This is one of the most significant, will be significant improvements and cost savings. So that's kind of what I was thinking about. I think of you a lot.
Thank you.
I would not have the stick to it even to go this far.
We, you know, there's, Kevin and I are super proud of the team that has been working so hard on all of this. And I think another thing, thank you for your concern also about how big and complex the project is. Again, the team has done an outstanding job of pivoting when needed, thinking creatively, working hard. I know Kevin and I spend time poking at, you know, certain people and occasionally of, do you have a vacation plan? Do you need a break? You know, let's make sure you've got your backup plan and let's get your break in. So it is a marathon project for sure. So thank you for your kind words.
Well, just don't lose sight of the value that this work is moving for our right people.
Any new interesting wins other than one notable detection or any issues with unsafe meter bases we found or?
You know, meter bases have gone, for the most part, electric meter bases have gone very well. We've only had one or two, I believe, now that needed to be tweaked. So we haven't encountered like some real dangerous things that we were able to correct. I think that will come as we maybe get into some older communities, older construction. But for now, nothing substantial right there. I think a lot of our, we're looking ahead, certainly our time of day rates is getting a lot of attention. And Kevin and I are also working with a team on kind of our strategy for how we're going to roll out the next substantial benefits related to these meters.
So, you know, the one thing I've noticed, my meter is looking at the data. You know, I've talked to you before about this. Sometimes, like last night, the lag was 2.5 hours. That was in my snow put in the actual time. It's been as much as 8. And I'm wondering, as you get to a place where people are, that data becomes more important to them, are we going to just sort of settle on a time that we know census systems can handle? Or what are your thoughts about that and our customers, you know, when we're, when it's all implemented?
Our goal is as close to real time as possible. And that's something that we're partnering up with some of Census's other customers to help push them forward to getting to that point. That is where the industry as a whole needs to go. We need that information feedback to change behavior, yes. Really. And the closer you can marry those up, as I'm sure is where you're going, the better. So yeah, we definitely want to tie that back very closely, and real time would be.
It's great that you're collaborating with other users, other customers, in other places.
In fact, the district has taken the lead on setting up a group and running this group of customers and giving feedback and helping to drive that change there.
That's very typical of BD, yes, would have been lead and done a lot of the work for other programs.
Yeah, very strong team and a lot of recognition and collaboration from the industry as a result.
So is this something that, to get it to almost real time, is this something that has to be developed? Is it?
It's something, I think it's a
technical thing?
It's technical work on Census's part to be able to do that. We have built our systems in preparation to receive real time. So we just need them to work on their parts of it and make that part of it.
You have the charges more for it?
No.
They're gonna sell more meters to other customers if they can do that.
Well,
I think that would be a big sell.
That was one of the big sales hinges for the conversion of the meter technology. And so hopefully maybe over the next few years, by the time we are fully installed, they might have fixed it up.
Yeah, I don't have a time frame for you, but I know.
Oh, no, I'm not asking for a time frame. Are there any other meter manufacturers that have accomplished that?
I don't know the answer to that.
Leading edge.
Yeah, that's pretty leading edge, but I believe I know all the meter manufacturers are talking about it.
I will say, if we have customers going in time of day breaks, they're going to have a rich data set to look at, their own usage to understand it, and also understand their behaviors and how it affects that time of day aspect. It's pretty clear, you know, when you bought something the other, for instance, right, how much your consumption is.
Yeah, and part of the work that's going to be happening through strategy discussions that we're having with my Snowpud team is making sure that message, that it's clear.
Yeah.
That it's not, we're not relying on customers to have to do the math in their head, as it were, but that we're clearly presenting to them those savings and the opportunities for savings. Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you very much.
Great job, Tim and Kevin. Next up.
We'll take a short break. It's because we only have one more item.
It is a long one.
Oh, okay. Short break would be good then. Okay.
It's a big one, so.
All right. Well, let's take 5 minutes. Let's see. 10:48. Let's see. 9:55.
Okay, next up is the 2024 water rate retail rate proposal with Christina Art and Grant Wood. Good morning, Christina.
Good morning,
welcome.
I'm Christina Art, the manager at the Water Group. I'm here to talk to you about the 2024 retail rate proposal.
Can you get a little closer to your mic, or?
Yeah.
Thank you, Christine.
No problem. So the purpose of today is really just to brief you on our 2024 retail rate recommendation. There's no action today. We're going to come back in January. So today we're going to briefly go over a background of where we were this time last year, some drivers that were impacting the water rates, and then kind of our revenue requirement, cost of service analysis, and revenue rates. So last year at this time we did bring up this graphic. This is where we were looking at being based on all assumptions and built in costs that we were looking to incur through 2023. And at that time, this rate path did actually meet our current fiscal targets. Going into and through 2023, we have updated those forecasted revenues and expenses to the year-end projections. Right now, we're looking at a one-time fund balance increase of $1.5 million, but conversely, we are also looking at an increase to all of those expenses of $1.3 million. A large part of that is City of Everett. In 2023, we saw an increase of almost 8%, and we're going to see an increase of 8.1% in 2024. It's a big jump for us. City of Everett is actually about 25 to 30% of our O&M expenses, so that does impact us. And then we also had some labor cost inflation increases, and these are in line with the electric side as well. Some of the drivers that are impacting our water rates, like I mentioned, there is the City of Everett. And based on budget presentations that we have already previously gone through, others are supply chain, this is on our meter replacement program, monthly meter reading, and then administrative costs shared with electric. We are also looking at trying to propose an enhancement to our water fiscal policy targets, more specifically around the days cash on hand. Right now we have a 90 days cash on hand target, and we're looking to increase that to 120 based on inflationary cost. And then just some comments that we actually heard from our creditors, such as Moody's, when we went through our bond issuance just recently in the fall. We do have some credit challenges and some factors that could lead to some downgrades. So looking at enhancing those fiscal targets is something that we would love to do. So right now we have a 90 days cash on hand fiscal policy target, and we're looking to enhance that to 120.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Specifically out towards 2026, which is when we're looking to go out for another bond issuance. As our proposed next options, anyways. So,
The true check affecting it, is it because we thought we'd have more meters installed?
Yeah, we were hoping to be a little bit further down the tracks at this time, but we're not. So, and then that contract did get renegotiated, and we're looking at about a $30,000 increase for our 2024 budget. This graphic is one that we wanted to put in to show that historically from 2013, our rate increases, specifically from 2018 to current, have been under the CPI, the cost inflation index. So we feel pretty good about that, but we are needing to kind of bring up the gap a little bit in order to offset some of those costs, such as City of Everett. And then even some of our own costs with chemicals in order to treat the water. And this graphic is specifically with the City of Everett. These are all based on current assumptions with their rate increase. We are not going to know the actual rate increase for 2025 through 2028 until late in Q4. 2024, usually December. But on average in the last 4 years, we've seen an increase from the City of Everett ranging from 4 to 4.5%. And this graphic just combines kind of the three, the cost index, the inflation, and the City of Everett versus our total overall district rate increases for the last few years since 2013. And typically since 2013, we have been under. Going through some of our cost drivers, some of that is with our aging water mains. Since 2008, we have replaced a little over 20 miles of aging water mains at a cost of almost $29 million. And we are currently budgeted for about 3,100 feet of replacement in 2024.
How many miles need to be done?
We have about 15 miles that still need replacement. Okay. And of the 412 miles that we have in total, that accounts for about 3.8% that actually need attention.
Okay.
So if you do like approximately 3,100 a year, it seems like it's going to take us 20 plus years. Is that?
No, right? we do have to push out our estimated. Originally, we were trying to have all of those done within by 2028. We have pushed that out to 2031 because we have some heavy capital years coming up through 2026. But we are looking to finish that up by 2031 based on the projects we have budgeted.
Is that one thing? Just right. AGM of the water utility. So back in 2008, when I came to the board, you know, said 20 years, you know, we try to have that done. At the time, there's about 30.5 miles of aging pipe that need replacement. 20.5 done, the number seems to be growing. So why? So a couple reasons. One, we took on the kayak system, the Warren Beach system. That was about 4.7 miles of pipe. We've already replaced 2.6 of that to kind of bring it up to par. But also in 2008, our GIS system was a little bit in its infancy, so we're finding more and more things where the GIS wasn't in sync to reality. So we found about another 2 miles of old pipe. So again, it's kind of a little bit of a moving target, but I think we've got control of it. And we did have to, with the huge kind of, we have a pretty big bump in capital, an AMI and a couple of reservoirs. So we did push it out to 2031, as Christina mentioned. So just a little bit of context and just the, it is kind of a moving target. We're addressing it, and I think we're still doing a really good job getting that back in place.
That's helpful. I wasn't being critical. I was just concerned that we're going to have a catastrophic failure and our customers will lurch.
Well, in all honesty, back in 2008, that was the direction we were going, as we continued to, you know, kind of work on it, but not really put that huge effort into it. So it was this kind of moving target that just kind of pushed out as other higher priorities kind of took the dollars. So that really was the commitment back in 2008 to try to get a hold of that and get those mains replaced. So.
I have a question about the materials.
Mm-hmm.
Replacing the asbestos cement with new asbestos cement?
No, we haven't put AC main in the ground since I think 1970s. So ductile iron, so it's a metal, kind of a malleable type for the most part, 100-year life. We have, you know, there's always going to be new problems, right? So we're going to get this AC main replaced. We've been having we had a main break last week where 1995 main, the bonnet, so the bolts in the bonnet corroded and the bonnet blew off. So it's always going to be something that we have to continue to work on as far as replacing, but that old AC main is what our priority is right now, and it's in there. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I'm just, you know, always interested in what kinds of materials people are using, and like what's the top of the line, what are we using, what's not so good.
Ductile iron is kind of
what kind of iron?
Ductile iron. It's a standard in the industry. Typically, you can get about 100 years life out of it. So the picture on your left, that's a new ductile iron line.
When you say it slowly, what kind of iron?
Ductile.
Ductile.
Like
D-U-C-T-I-L. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
So it's not cast iron, which is more brittle.
Okay. I gotcha.
It's been formed, so it's a little bit
ductile or
ductile.
Okay. Thank you.
With our Lake Stevens well, that came online in 2012, and since then, we've produced 3.5 billion gallons for distribution throughout our Lake Stevens system, which is about 18%. to date, the Lake Stevens well has actually saved us approximately $6.5 million towards those purchase water costs. So we do attempt our very best to maximize the Lake Stevens well to be able to offset that O&M side from the City of Everett. This graphic is just going over some administrative costs that we do share with electric. These are constantly and consistently being reviewed to make sure that we're adequately paying our fair share of those costs, primarily labor, but it does also include some maintenance on the IT side.
This is probably harder to negotiate.
Yeah, a little bit. We do our best, though.
Probably today it reflects reality.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Weren't we?
And then just a high level look at what we're looking at for capital in the next few years. We did have a big budgeted capital year this year in 2023, and we anticipate that continuing through 2026. A large portion of that you can see is AMI through the next couple of years, but then we also have some big projects with our reservoirs and pump stations, as well as some of just our general capital, which would include some of those. And then this, we like to just show how much we're utilizing from our GFC funds versus our rate and bonded funds. So this fall we went out for bond funds, which will help offset some of that capital cost. And then we also have some GFCs for futures.
Remind me, GFC is?
It's the general facilities charge, yeah, it's for future development. We're looking to use about 3.2 million of that in the coming year, and quite a bit more in 2025. When we go into every year, when we're doing our rate setting process, the top two that we're looking at are the first two steps of the three main steps. Because we don't have any changes to fixed and variable charges, we didn't really look at that this year, but we definitely did look at our revenue requirement and then the equity evaluation or the cost of service allocation to make sure that not only are we getting the revenue needs that we need to annually maintain our fiscal obligations, but also make sure that those are allocated across the customer classes so that everyone is paying their global fair share. These are our targeted rate strategy guidelines, anywhere from cost inflation to what we're seeing in customer growth. Debt issuances that are coming up, like I mentioned, in 2026, we are looking at a possible debt issuance of a little shy of 18 million. And then also our days cash on hand, as I mentioned, we are hoping to look at enhancing that, going from 90 days cash on hand to 120 by 2026. As we do have some upcoming issuances, and based on the credit agencies and some comments that we got on the last one, we'd like to bolster that and make sure that we're in a better position.
So what is our actual cash on
hand? The day's cash on hand is 90 days, which is roughly 3 months.
That's not just a target, that's what it actually is. Okay.
Why are we waiting until 2026 to increase that? To 120, why are we waiting? Because isn't that partly why our bond rating went down?
Yeah, we're gonna need to work with Treasury and Finance in order to be able to change that fiscal target policy as that is on resolution. But we are gonna be taking the next couple of years to build that up to the 120 so that we are at that rate.
I just wanted to note that the day's cash on hand, it changes, it varies throughout the year, so it's not right at 90 days cash on hand. It's a little bit higher right now as we invite, you know, as we have the new projects or new costs, you know, we're trying to model is ensure it doesn't dip below that 90 days cash on hand or in the future the 120 days cash on hand.
But currently 90 days would for this afternoon. That's where we would need to be at. I don't have the actual number off the top of my head. This is our current rate strategy forecast. Again, focusing on 2024 as we do change and we do review all the assumptions going out from 2025 through 2028. However, for 2024, we are looking at a 3% general rate increase to help cover all of our O&M costs. And then we also, and getting up to that 120 days cash on hand, that's also playing into this, and keeping our debt service coverage. We're also looking at a 2.4% increase as the Everett Water pass through for a total rate increase of 5.4% in 2024. With the Everett rate increase, to be consistent with electric and how they handle BPA, we are looking to handle City of Everett in the same way. Because they historically have done 4-year rate increases, 2025, we're probably gonna have to combine with 2025 general rate increase like we are this year. However, 2026 to 2028, we're gonna know ahead of time, so we're gonna be able to come to you with that separately so that we can back that off of what we're talking about when we're coming to you for a water general rate.
That's a good option to take.
Just really quick, back to Commissioner Wolf's question around why wouldn't we just immediately go to 120 days. It's expensive. Just think about the additional days of cash on hand or the amount of cash that would elevate even more so the rate pressure. I mean, the rates that are built in now for 2024 and the forecast are in large part to get to that 120 days cash on hand. That's a significant increase.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking immediately. I was thinking maybe 2025. So now we're looking at 2026.
It just, the sooner we try to get there,
well, that's
the more
good.
Rate pressure,
good
the more
know.
Increase in rates that we would have to get there.
Okay, thank you, John.
You know, my concern is, and I understand the future is, it'll change. I mean, just like there was a few things, slide four and this slide, you see the change. I guess my concern is, I understand the inflationary challenges. Of course, inflation is going down, as we know. But I'm concerned, and I understand the need for the 120 days, but I'm concerned that we still are predicting a pretty high general rate increase past getting to the 120-day target. So
yeah.
I'm hoping we can relook at that. I don't like the trajectory of that line. It's a great line about the history of the CPI. You know, we're predicting not paralleling it. We're predicting,
And we will be taking another look at that. We did also take a look at what would happen if we kept it at 90 days cash on hand.
Yeah.
And by 2028, we would be looking at almost an 8% general rate increase, not just including the CDA better pass. We want to make sure that we're staying away from those double digits. So we do everything we can to mitigate. Yeah. We want to do everything we can to mitigate those costs. So slowly trying to get to the 120 days. While not impacting our customers as much as possible, the direction we're trying to go.
Just to make one more clarification or point. You know, again, obviously, we're just coming right now with the proposal for 2024. Things are going to change 2025, 2026, 2027, and 8. So we'll be coming back to the board with the revised number, the revised, you know, what the model is showing, revised recommendation, and it might. Will change. Hopefully some of the cost issues that we're seeing as far as supply and demand, hopefully those will come down and be able to curb it from other ways. But again, we're only looking for 2024. We'll be coming back to the board for we're showing kind of right now this is what it's showing, but it's, you know, that's just projections right now and they can change.
So is any of this because of Connect Up? I mean, I remember when we first looked at the business case wasn't as strong on the other side.
I mean, to some extent, because it's a big capital project, you know, $13 million, $14 million. So there's a lot of capital money going out. So we had to borrow to do that. So some of it is impacting from that. But again, I think the majority, and Christine can go over it more, is that the increased City of Everett rates, just increased in general cost of doing business is going up and it's gone up. So bigger drivers.
I mean, it could.
No, you go first.
I was just going to say, I think we have a general idea, at least based on the information that we've got from the City of Everett, on their forecasted rate increase. Honestly, we could put, especially for 27, 28, and the out years, we could put to be determined for ours. That is just a placeholder.
Wow.
We kind of balance, you know, what's the right thing to do to help provide you as much information as possible. So we're thinking, you know, in the out years, what's it gonna look like? Just based on the best information that we have right now. Just know that we are very focused on minimizing to the greatest extent possible any rate increase or rate impact to our customers.
Yeah, I have water. I have a question about, you know, pertaining to prices of things in general. It's all about supply and demand. How is with all the rain that we're having and will have, or at least it's projected that we're gonna have a lot of rain going forward generally, maybe throughout some summer, but how is the supply in terms of the water that we've, you know, spade and lay and what comes into Lake Stevens and stuff?
Good question. Right now, Spada is doing good as far as filling up. They're expecting enough water. Everett is expecting enough water to supply all the demands into 2024. I mean, things can change, obviously. So from that perspective, I think we'll have the water to sell. And, you know, might get more rain in the winter as things change, climate change, you know, less in the summer. People tend to use more water in the summer, keep their yards green. So that's where we see those spikes. So but I think from a planning perspective, I think we have going into 2024, the water's there. Not too concerned, but again, things change.
I pay a lot of attention to water issues, and I know on the east side, aquifers are diminishing, and they're doing water trading, and some parts of the country just don't have water, and it's getting really bad, but we're in good shape.
We're very blessed with the Spade Reservoir that the district created. So, you know, UD created that asset for Snohomish County.
Yeah.
From both the generation side, but also the water supply side.
For sure. Has ever, ever experienced a shortfall since the height of the dam increase?
We've had several years that we're in drought, kind of that we had to, we had to talk to the customers about volunteering, conserving water, just like Seattle did this year. So their reservoirs were a little bit lower than they wanted to. I mean, ours were too, kind of into June, July timeframe, but then by the time they got to the point that would trigger us having an advisory to ask customers to kind of lower their usage, we'd already kind of turned the corner and the rain already started. So it was close this year, as far as it was pretty low, and the rain started and we were okay. So then Seattle was still, you know, a few weeks ago or a month ago, they were still talking about asking their customers to conserve. So,
well, after the meters are all installed, I do know we can talk again about a conservation program.
I think that's
where,
one of
whereby people would be rewarded for conserving.
I think that's one of the, and you know, we talked about AMI in the future or in the past. We were talking about the business case when I came up here. I think that's one of the biggest opportunities that we have.
Yes.
Is really looking at AMI, looking at conservation rates for those even peak days or peak times, you know, different ways of, so that's going to provide a lot of flexibility and information. And again, that feedback to our customers, that feedback on a daily basis, how much water they're really using. So when we go out and ask people to voluntarily conserve, have a mechanism to see what the impact is if they don't water a portion of their yard or change the zone around, or instead of watering 10 minutes, they only water 5 minutes and see the impact of their rates. So just that visibility to what their bill is going to be huge for the AMI. So I think that's, I'm really excited about it.
I'll be a cheerleader for that.
Yes, I will be a cheerleader from the sidelines too.
On the water side, I would think it would be a more direct connection for the customer.
Yeah.
I really do. And if I'm going outside of the scope of today's presentation, is a consideration ever given to front-loading rate change over the financial period? In other words, so that future increases can be less. And then I'm thinking, well, we really can't, because COSA wouldn't support that.
It is a strategy, and we do talk about that, because this sooner you put a rate increase in place at whatever level, it compounds, right? So you could do if you had 3 and 3, you could do 4 and 2, and that 4 and 2 is actually greater in total dollars, because you got the 4 coming in sooner. We do talk about that, but we just, again, we want to balance that, not just with COSA, but also and the impact to our customers.
I understand that.
I think that's something the board's always supported, that concept of small incremental rate increases, just so you don't get behind. It's kind of hard if you have too many 0% increases or no increases for years to catch back up. So that small incremental rate increase concept is what I think we
cheerleader for that too.
Yeah, definitely.
So as of today, this is our current revenue requirement and rate scenario, showing the total of 5.4%, with 2.4% of that being the City of Everett and 3% of that being our UD general rate increase. Just on that rate scenario, you'll see that it does include an account for City of Everett, which 2.4 is the impact from the 8.1% increase that we're going to see just in this year. It also is going to help level out some of the other increases that we are anticipating coming our way, and then also helps to maintain fiscal targets. benefits, such as current 90-day cash on hand plus the enhanced 100.
Well, this is a little off topic, but if I look at the sample residential monthly bill, people should feel really good about that. And unless I've paid over 300 this week.
Yes, and I do have a slide showing that.
It's high.
Yeah.
A lot of that's for septic and
water
runoff. So in the cities, do they have extra charges for managing the runoff? You know,
yes.
The runoff.
Yes, they do. And the slide that I have later is specific to just water in those different areas and how we compare to those other utilities.
I know. I was curious about what people in Lake Stevens pay overall compared to my 300.
Well, I used to live in Lake Stevens, and the sewer district bill when I moved out of Lake Stevens was pushing $100 a month.
Yeah, it's not as, yeah, my last one was just 273.
Yeah. Mine in Arlington is about 125. Yeah. Water, sewer, and storm water.
It's really hard. It's really hard to find
sewer,
it's really hard to find the leak. Yeah. When you have pipes and you come under concrete and all of that.
I had a question on the
pass-through. Mm-hmm.
You said you were going to start pass-through in 2026?
Well, 2024, we're actually considering that.
Okay.
But 2025, we're going to come at the same time with any assumed general rate increase for the for our PUD.
Okay.
Rate increase. We'll come at the same time for 2025, because we're not going to know 2025's rate increase from the City of Everett until late Q4 of 2024, usually December.
Okay.
So right before we even come here, we'll have an idea.
So in 2026, it does on the electric side.
Yeah, so 2026 is when we're going to be able to come earlier with the City of Everett pass-through amount. That'll be effective January 1st, and then ours will continue to try for the March 1st.
And we would separate them like we do on the electric side.
Yes.
I don't know the answer to this question. I never thought of it before, but when a Lake Stevens customer gets the bill, are they getting both water and electric on the same bill?
Yes. So currently for 2024, we are looking for March, and we are looking to continue progressing our multifamily and commercial family through a COSA allocation. When we started this in 2018 with the COSA allocation, the cost of service, making sure they do their equitable share, multifamily and commercial classes were seen to be underpaying their fair share by about 20 to 25%. After 2024 and using the phase-in approach, we do anticipate seeing that to be within a plus or minus 5%, which means they're going to be a little bit more equitable. And we may not need to do a phase-in approach. We may be able to just do it across the board. But we'll take a look at that as we update customer statistics and any actuals to revenues and expenses in the future.
But there are different rate schedules, right?
Yes.
So I recall that, what's percent now?
The difference?
Well, in other words, I didn't think one rate class could subsidize the cost of another rate class. Is that correct?
Correct.
And so therefore, you're trying to true
We're trying to true them up, yes. So like I said, when we started in 2018, they were not adequately paying their fair share. They were off by about 20 to 25%.
That's huge.
So that's why theirs have been a little bit higher the last few years when we've done rate increases. And this year we're looking at doing 6.75% for multifamily and commercial and 5.26% for residential, making up that 5.5%. Yeah, this is just another graphic kind of showing the same thing that we were just talking about, and how since 2018 we've been trying to get them up to the same equity in paying their fair share. And after 2024, we do feel they're going to be within that plus or minus 5%. This graphic is showing the proposed rates, including their cost of service phase-in. So single family, this year the existing rates are $23.92 for the monthly customer charge and $3.66 for 100 cubic foot on the commodity. And the green is what we're proposing for 2024, which is an increase of about $2.60.
So without taking out a calculator, are these going up the commodity rate and the customer charge at the same rate?
Yes, they are.
Does that, well, let me ask this, does that make sense when Everett has a certain pass through a certain amount for Everett for the commodity we're buying from them? Is that?
Yeah, we're trying to keep it pretty consistent between the usage and the actual monthly rate, where we go out and do all meter reading and maintenance of those meters. We're going to be looking at all of that when we recalibrate all the customer statistics in 2024. So that could possibly change. The other thing we're looking at doing and have looked at doing is realigning the monthly customer charge and changing it to base charge to be more in line with electric and how they're handling their base charge, so as to not confuse the customer. So that's conversations that I'm having with IT right now, and we're looking at fall of 2024 to be able to change that. And this graphic is just showing a sample rate impact. Again, like I said, it's a difference of about $2.60 for a single family. Multifamily and commercial is heavily based on how much water they use in a monthly period. So this just gives a range on a low multifamily user and commercial user versus a high-end user. And then, like I mentioned, this is kind of a rate comparison. The green bar is where we currently are with other rates and monthly bills with other utilities in our area. We are significantly lower than the vast majority of utilities in our neighboring area, and we don't anticipate that to change even with the recommended rate increase. The bar might move one.
So if you look at these, how many of these are as dependent upon Everett's water supply as we are? Thoughts, is that having to do with the?
There's a couple, but not. I mean,
the price of gadgets is so high, but I guess it's so rural. Is that the?
Yeah, and they're also looking at it's between 5 and 6% annually out through 2026 or 2027.
And that's a good point. I mean, there are some of these that are more rural, some that are more urban, like Alderwood, Mukilteo. Some gets some of their water actually through wholesale from us, from City of Everett. Silver Lake gets all their water from City of Everett. Grand Falls also gets their water from us. Marysville gets the majority of their water from a mix of sources. Spanish Plateau, different sources. And you'll notice that the difference between outside the UGA and the inside the UGA. And again, it's that cost to serve a rural area is more. So those out of city customers cost more. And that's largely what we have, right? We have a system that serves the Lake Stevens area, but then a lot of rural areas, a lot of 5-acre parcels. So it's more expensive to serve system like ours than just a normal municipal city block.
Right. So Alderwood, is that Everett?
Alderwood purchased their water, 100% of their water from City of Everett.
Okay. They have a very high density area.
Very high density. It's actually the largest water system in Snohomish County. It's Alderwood's water system.
Well, I'm Silver Lake and it's way down there. I'm Silver Lake and I'm complaining about my bill, but it's way down there.
But I guess the other thing we don't know is, I mean, I feel very good that we are actively dealing with maintaining our system and replacing our older mains. And we have no idea, you may have an idea, but I can't speculate on how all these municipalities and other systems are doing, investing in that. We know what systems we've taken over the condition they've been in.
So. I know that it's a struggle across the country as far as just in the industry wide, we have a lot of infrastructure that's in the ground, that's aging, it's not being replaced. I can't say exactly how much everyone has, but I can say that, again, serving a more rural customer base, we have more miles of main per customer than the Alderwoods, the Mukilteos, Silver Lakes.
Thank you.
Again, just kind of to review our 2024 rate increase, recommended overall is 5.4 with a general rate increase in the district at 3%, and the city of Denver pass-through being 2.4% of that. Using the cost of service phase-in, where a single family will receive about 5.26% of that and 6.75% for multifamily, commercial, and industrial. So next steps right now, we'd be coming back to you in January on the 9th for a public hearing, and then later in January for adoption. The effective date would be March 1st for these rate increases, which we work with IT and Tensor County with. And then throughout 2024, we're going to revisit that cost of service phase-in approach, as well as any connection charges, wholesale, and then, as Brent mentioned, going with AMI and being able to get more data out of it, being able to look at those conservation rates at a future date.
Is there any questions?
I don't either, because I can't turn my thing on, so.
Thank you. No, no more. Thank you very much.
Great job, Christina. So that is it for our presentations this morning.
Okay, it is now 10:33 a.m. and the meeting is recessed. The regular meeting will reconvene here in the commission meeting room at 1:30 p.m.